there's the potential that there will be natural gas shortages in the next 2 weeks. There's a pipeline. You just have to turn it off. When you turn it off, where does the, you know, gas come from? You can't all of a sudden produce gas in the middle of winter, right? So these are very serious consequences. And if it wasn't very obvious that these things are about to happen, I wouldn't be on a podcast talking about them, right? Yeah. Because this is scary stuff. And just so you know, I mean, I just gave you scenario two. What I didn't do is break it down into three potential choices
within that.
And I want to do that because I think that the big question is, what is the impact on real estate? And I think we have to do an option A, B, C on that. So when you're ready, we can talk about that.
So the big question is, how are entrepreneurs and professionals like us earning good money? How are they converting that into high net worth and passive monthly cash flow? What was once reserved for wealthy families, REITs, and pension funds is now available to accredited investors through what I call club syndications. On this show, my goal is to give you the same strategies and practices that you can start using now to create significant wealth investing in commercial real estate. You can do that directly in your own deals or passively in someone else's. My name is Shane Melanson, and welcome to the Investing Advantage Podcast. On today's show, I had Neil Bawa join me, and initially we were going to talk about commercial real estate development, but I think what was more timely was to discuss the impact of rising oil prices and specifically what's going on with Russia and the fact that some countries like the US and the Eurozone considering to stop purchasing oil from Russia. And what are the possible impacts and implications of this? Whether you are a real estate investor or not, I think this is going to impact every person in the world. And I don't say that lightly. I really do believe that when we see oil climbing as rapidly as we have over the past, call it 2 weeks, and specifically over the past 3 days. So this is March 7th, 2022. And I thought it would be important to share this with my community. Now, I will go on record as saying I am certainly no expert. I haven't spent a lot of time researching this. And so really, this is large part thanks to Neil. And none of this is meant to be investing advice. And frankly, we are trying to stay inside the lines of how oil prices are going to impact other areas of the economy. And none of this is fact. These are just Neil's opinions. So without any further delay, let's get into my interview with Neil Bawa.
Okay. Welcome back to the Investing Advantage. Today, I am joined, I don't know if I've ever had the same guest on twice, Neil Bawa. If you haven't heard the first conversation that Neil and I did, I'll link it in the show notes. It was a fabulous interview and conversation. And I was actually just mentioning to Neil before we hit record that in that conversation, he shared with me some of the investing strategies that he is using to go forward. And I respect Neil so much that I actually started to kind of build out our own little business model. And I mentioned that we're literally, we removed conditions today to do a 60-unit townhouse development here in Calgary. So all that to say—
You owe me like a really expensive steak then.
Yeah, exactly. With a fancy bottle of wine too. So the next time—
There you go.
The next time, you're in San Diego. Or no,
I'm in San Francisco. But yeah, I come up to Canada often, so it's not too
okay,
far.
Okay, beautiful. So Neil, if you don't know him, he's the CEO of Grow Capitus. He has 4,100 doors under management, $1 billion now, which is incredible because I had my notes from the last time I interviewed you, and it was probably a year ago. And so he's more than doubled in the past year. And so initially, when we put this on the calendar, we were going to talk about real estate. But I think I'm going to date stamp this, frankly, because I think the conversation is so timely that it warrants it. So this is March 7th, 2022, my sister's birthday. And we're going to talk about oil today, because I think what's going on right now, I think we'd be a little tone deaf if we just focused on real estate. I think this is going to be more interesting. And frankly, for me, it'll be very enlightening. So Neil, thanks for coming. And tell us, like, what about the changes that have happened in the last week, right? That you have started to really go down the rabbit hole of understanding oil, the fact that Russia and the US are maybe not going to be trade partners anymore. So I'm going to let you kind of run with that.
Sounds good. Well, firstly, thanks for having me back on the show. It's great to be here. What an incredible day, you know, in terms of what's happening geopolitically. I'm fully immersed in it. And so I'm going to give you a little bit of a background on what is happening there. And I'm going to start it by saying that today, March 7th, is day two of the great 2022 oil shock. Okay. And I started, you know, talking about this yesterday, which was March 6th, even though we're recording it on March 7th, this is when I started doing a ton of research. I spent 12 hours on this yesterday. And by the way, March 6th is a date that has great personal significance for me. 2 years ago, on March 6, 2020, I wrote my first three coronavirus videos and I posted them on March 7th, which is, you know, basically would be today. And they quickly became by far the most controversial videos on our channels. I've never been laughed at so much. But I actually doubled down, and 5 days later, on March 11th, I made a much longer video, 45 minutes video, which has had massive numbers of hits. I predicted that the US would be in full lockdown before the end of the month. As you now all know, it really didn't take that long. The US was in lockdown 12 days after that March 11th video. Still took a lot of flack from people on March 11th, which surprised me because I thought the intervening 5 days would have been sufficient, but you know, it is what it is. So today, 24 months later, I want to talk about the next shock to the world economy. I call it the great 2022 oil shock. And we'll talk about how it will affect the real estate market in Canada and in the US, both positively and negatively, right? And you know, some people might say, well, you know, you can't call this the beginning of the oil shock because you know, oil prices have already gone up, right? So I'll just give you the US numbers. On February 19th, 16 days ago, a barrel of Brent crude oil was $91, Shane, right? When the markets opened in the US today, they were $123 a barrel. So they've gone up, you know, $32 already, which is a huge amount. So why is yesterday the first day of the great 2022 oil shock, right? So two reasons. Today, many remote places in the US have hit $7 a gallon, right? Parts of Northern California woke up today to $6 a gallon. And the US average passed $4 a gallon for the first time since 2008, which was the last oil shock 14 years ago. And remember, many, many academics and many real estate guys consider the 2008 oil shock when oil went to $147 a barrel as the tipping point event for the Great Recession, right? Remember that, because when we talk about how this is going to impact interest rate hikes in real estate, remember that fact that it was a tipping point. It didn't cause a recession, it was a tipping point, right? The second reason, which is more important, why I consider that yesterday was day one of the great oil shock, is that it became obvious to me yesterday that the US and the Eurozone are clearly scrambling. They're scrambling to work with the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and other oil producing nations and are requesting them to increase output. I've also heard that Joe Biden might fly today to Saudi Arabia to request this in person from the Sheikh. This can only have one meaning. There is now an internal agreement between the Eurozone and the US to stop buying Russian oil, right? Otherwise, why do all of this stuff? Biden's been super clear that the US will not stop buying Russian oil by itself. We only want to do it if the Eurozone wants to do it, right? And if the US stops buying Russian oil, that's only a token move, Shane. That's only a token move. It has no impact on the US economy. Now, that's a big statement, right? I mean, you just stop buying Russian oil, right? But to understand why I'm saying that, you know, is it okay, Shane, to step back for 60 seconds and really look at oil supply, oil demand in the world, right? I mean, people have to really understand what this stuff means and why it affects real estate so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
So let's look at supply and demand. Let's start with Russia. Russia, third largest producer of oil in the world, just behind the US and the Saudis. They produce 11 to 12 million barrels a day, right? Luckily, they burn two-thirds of it internally. So about 5 million barrels a day gets shipped out to the rest of the world. 60% goes to Europe, 20% goes to China. The rest goes to other countries. They're also a big producer of natural gas. And most of the natural gas gets sold to the Eurozone, including a massive chunk that goes directly to the Germans, right? Keep in mind, it's very cold in Europe right now. So natural gas demand is at its highest, making it very difficult for anyone to stop buying Russian gas. And Putin's been banking on this. And that's why he attacked in the winter, even though attacking another country in the winter is considered much harder. You lose a lot more soldiers, but it's really, really difficult for the Eurozone to cut him off at this point, right? So that's Russia. Now let's look at the first and second largest producer of oil in the world. Canada's up there, but it's not first. The US is the largest producer of oil in the world. We're above 12 million barrels a day and rising. We're also the swing producer of the world. This means that if the price of oil goes above $90 a barrel for more than a few months, the US shale producers, they open the capped wells in Texas and US production goes up. And that puts a cap on the prices. And that's why OPEC can no longer blackmail the world the way that they did back in the 70s. You remember years of blackmails and, you know, $10 a gallon oil, right? That happened because they could actually manipulate the price. Now they can't. The US is a swing producer. And then speaking of OPEC, the third big player is the Saudis, right? Yeah. They produce 10 million barrels a day. And even though they can increase supply, they tend not to do that because they've got internal OPEC agreements that are very, very strict, which is why Biden's thinking of going there in person to convince them, right? So that's the big three. They produce about 35 million barrels. The world uses 90 million barrels a day, maybe a little more. Mm-hmm. So some of your listeners might be wondering, Shane, why does the 5 million barrels a day that the Russians sell make such a huge difference that it can impact real estate in Calgary? Mm-hmm. Right? Even though the Russians are selling those barrels to the Europeans. Well, that's because of something very important that everyone that has money in real estate needs to understand. Demand flexibility. The demand flexibility for different goods is different. The demand for oil is extremely, shockingly inflexible, right? This means that a 5% reduction in world supply easily leads to a 50 to 100% increase in price. Why? Because the price has to increase, Shane, by a very, very painful amount before enough people change their behavior.
Right.
And they have to change their behavior for the demand to drop. Most people will not change their behavior because the price of oil goes up by a gallon or, a dollar or two. It's just not enough for us. And some people, $10 is not enough, right? So it's the lowest fringe of society that, and enough of them that have to make that change and start taking the bus or whatever it is. And so 5% is a huge deal, right? So with me so far, I mean, I hopefully this kind of, you see the scenarios, right?
Yeah, I mean, literally today, I saw our gas prices were on per liter went up another 10 cents. And I think since in the last 2 weeks, it's gone up at 30 cents a liter. So we're at $1.67. So on a gallon, that's probably we'd be pushing up on $7-$8 a gallon. And
exactly.
And yeah, absolutely. We're starting to see it. But to your point, that doesn't mean I'm going to stop driving, right? Like I still need to get around.
Exactly. So the pain has to accelerate from here before enough people actually stop driving, right? And that's why 5 million barrels is a lot. So with your permission, I want to share with you the three scenarios that could play out in the next 2 weeks,
yes, right?
And all of them impact real estate, some of them vastly more than the others. So because I don't know what's going to happen in the future, I came up with these scenarios because, you know, I have a large audience, about 58,000 people that are in my database, and they're like sending emails and saying, what do you think is going to happen? It's like, okay, might as well give you some scenarios. And then you do what you believe, whichever scenario you believe, you act accordingly, right? Yep. So I'm going to start with the least painful scenario. Okay. So in this scenario, and we'll call it scenario 1A, right? Some country in the Eurozone throws a wrench in the works and the US has an internal argument, decides not to stop buying, right? Decides not to stop buying Russian oil. So they keep buying, right? Mm-hmm. So in this scenario, the great 2022 oil shock is going to be short-lived. The price is going to go back to around maybe $90 a barrel, $95 a barrel within the next week or two. And while that is high, that doesn't qualify for an oil shock, right? What we're seeing today, I woke up this morning with oil in the US at $123 a barrel, which is shocking. We are the largest producer in the world. For us to be at 123, the forward-looking numbers must be way, way higher than 123, right? So in this scenario, if we don't stop buying gas from the Russians, we're going to see a little blip up in inflation because, you know, it's $90, $95 a barrel is pretty high. But nothing much changes in Canada. Nothing much changes in the US, right? The US economy is supposed to be around 3% GDP growth this year. Canadians are supposed to be around 2%. Our Fed still raises interest rates, though now they're probably going to raise them by 4 to 5 times rather than 6 to 7 times, which they're threatening to do right now, right? They were threatening to do 2 weeks ago because there is still a war raging. We're still buying Russian oil, but there's a war raging. So they're going to be a little more cautious when raising rates. The same thing is going to happen. The Canadians are also threatening to raise rates. Everybody's going to slow down a little bit on the rates. And that might, you might think that you know, helps the real estate economy. But keep in mind, there's also a lot of inflation. So there's, you know, pros and cons there. So the problem, Shane, is I'm giving this scenario a 30% chance of happening. Biden is not going to prepare to go to Saudi Arabia unless the Eurozone leaders have already agreed. Why waste all that time unless the Eurozones have agreed? So I think they've agreed, or maybe, and I'm a little hopeful that this is going to happen, maybe they've only agreed conditionally that the Saudis have to hike production by a couple million barrels before they agree.
Right.
So if that's the case, maybe that's where we are today. In that case, scenario 1A still applies. Not a huge deal. Slight impact on Canadian U.S. you know, real estate, slight impact on U.S. real estate. 5 million barrels of oil per day disappear from the world oil market. In 2 weeks or less, oil prices are going to hit $185 to $200 a barrel. Bank of America said this morning, $200 a barrel. JP Morgan said this morning, $185 a barrel. Both are catastrophic. Remember, the all-time record for the U.S. is $147 a barrel, very brief, and is widely recognized as a straw that broke the U.S. economy's back, right? So keep in mind that the real estate meltdown did cause the 2008 crisis, but the oil shock had a lot to do with the severity of the 2008 meltdown, right? So this stuff matters a lot. Now, in this scenario, I'll call it scenario 2, expect worldwide stock market crashes in the coming 2 weeks. The moment we cut Russian oil off, some markets are going to basically go into free fall. India and the Philippines will be affected the most. They are the biggest oil importers. They have very little domestic oil. They're heavily dependent on oil. And most Asian economies cannot function at all at anything over 150. I mean, there's portions of their economies that effectively have to be shut down at 150 plus. But this is why the price of oil never goes over 150, because it basically starts to kill demand in an extremely brute force way, right? Now, the Eurozone is going to be in severe pain because they have this dependency on natural gas. It's the winter. So their stock market will nosedive in the next week. And, you know, what about the Canadians? I mean, we're oil producers as Canadians, but and we've got the U.S. next to us, right? Biggest oil producer in the world. You know, between the two of us, we're going to be good. Unfortunately, that's wrong. This is what most people are thinking. Everyone's wrong. No one has ever set the price of oil at a country level. It's only set at a world level. So our stock market would also see intense pain. The Canadian stock market and the U.S. stock markets would immediately lose at least 10%, maybe 20% in the coming 2 weeks, right? And again, we're not talking about something that is not happening. Just go to CNN. The headline at the top says, it seems we're about to stop buying Russian oil. That is the headline on FoxNews.com and CNN right now. So this is imminent unless something changes that I don't know about, right? So keep in mind, oil at $185 a barrel or $200 a barrel has one other severe consequence. It will have a severe impact, upward impact on Canadian and US inflation, mm-hmm. right? Because our economies are designed to function around $80 a barrel. When you take that up to $185 a barrel, everything immediately is massively more expensive. So it would force both Canada and the US to hike interest rates this month and do so even with the stock markets in free fall. So that's a double whammy, right? Because when inflation all of a sudden spikes this crazily, you have no choice but to hike. Otherwise, it'll get out of control. And you're hiking interest rates on a day when your stock market's crashing.
I mean, I try to stay out of politics because it's not my strong suit, but he's thinking like a chess master, right? He's thinking down the line. And certainly his I'm just going to talk about the economy. I'm not going to talk about the other aspects of what's going on today because it's, you know, it's outside of my wheelhouse and I just have my own kind of personal opinion on it. But is Putin doing this knowing that this is an implication and that like either way he's getting what he wants?
No, I don't think so. I do not believe that Putin thought that the world would exercise this option. I don't think any of his advisors told him that the Eurozone and the US would get together and basically stop buying Russian oil. In every scenario, I think that these people gamed, Russia was still selling $500 million of oil per day, right? They said, oh yeah, well, they'll put sanctions on everything else. But we don't care because by far, most of our dollars come from selling $500 million of oil every day. We still have some, you know, lots of money to fund our war. I don't think this scenario was even considered because there is extraordinary downside to the world economy to press this button, right? I mean, especially the Eurozone, right? There's the potential that there will be natural gas shortages in the next 2 weeks. There's a pipeline. You just have to turn it off. When you turn it off, where does the gas come from? You can't all of a sudden produce gas in the middle of winter, right? So these are very serious consequences. And if it wasn't very obvious that these things are about to happen, I wouldn't be on a podcast talking about them, right? Yeah. Because this is scary stuff. And just so you know, I mean, I just gave you scenario two. What I didn't do is break it down into three potential choices
within that.
And I want to do that because I think that the big question is, what is the impact on real estate? And I think we have to do an option A, B, C on that. So when you're ready, we can talk about that.
Yeah, no, let's do that. I'll circle back on some of my other questions because it very well may be that, well, I'll just ask this question before we get into that. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long do you see this going on for, right? Because to me, it's like, okay, so if they shut this down, if they stop buying and they essentially sanction any Russian oil, like, to me, is it who gives first, right? Is it because at some point someone is going to cave? At least that would be my opinion, but I don't know because I haven't studied this.
My three scenarios are entirely based on your question, the answer to your question, right? So let me give you the three scenarios. I think it completely answers your question. Okay. So there's three versions of this scenario, okay? And the impact on real estate varies in all three of the scenarios. Okay. And I'm going to call them scenario 2A, 2B, and 2C because I'm a numbers guy. I attach a number to everything, right?
Yep.
So in all of these scenarios, all three of them, what I just mentioned is likely to happen, right? So you have a stock market crash worldwide. You know, we've stopped buying Russian oil. There's a lot of pain in the economy. There's a lot of stock market declines, both in the US and in Canada. And the Fed is forced to raise interest rates because of extraordinary immediate inflation in the economy. Okay. Now, having said that all of these things will happen, what happens next? Mm-hmm. That's the key question that Shane's happening, right? It depends upon what happens in the next 2 or 3 weeks, okay? So I'm going to do now scenario 2A. In scenario 2A, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, the Russians come to their senses. Remember, these guys are making $500 million a day, selling 5 million barrels a day of oil. That's $500 million a day that funds their war effort. Without this money, the Russian economy would stall completely, like completely, right? Beyond what we've seen anything before. Within 2 weeks, there would be hyperinflation in the Russian economy, bread selling at 20% increases per day, and the Russian stock market would be shut down permanently. They haven't opened, by the way, since the day that Russia took over, but now they would be forced to shut it down for weeks or months because if they open it, it falls to zero, right? So then they would be forced to close it again. So why open? So in this scenario, if the Russians come to their senses, they negotiate for peace. In that scenario, the overall impact should still be fairly low. It's going to be a really bad next 2.5 weeks. But beyond that point, as soon as there's peace, the world's going to start buying Russian oil again, right? In this case, the great 2022 oil shock would be very painful, but very short. Right. So it's only really the next 3 or 4 weeks because we push the nuclear button. We bring the Russians to their knees. The moment they negotiate something, the first thing they're going to negotiate is please start buying oil from us again. We start again. We have three horrible weeks. We sort of move forward. Right. So is scenario 2A clear? Right. It's a 3 week incredible amount of pain.
Yeah.
All right. So here's scenario 2B. Right. It's much worse. The guy goes nuts. He digs in his heel. He refuses to negotiate. The Ukrainians don't surrender. They do the same. 4 weeks from today, the war is still raging and Russia hasn't sold any oil for 4 weeks. Okay? With me so far?
Yeah.
In that case, definitely expect worldwide stock markets to crash multiple times in this time frame. Oil definitely will hit $200 a barrel and the Eurozone would go into recession because there's no way the Eurozone can function at $200 a barrel. They're not set up like that. They're set up to be a $60, $70 a barrel economy, and $200 would just, be terrible. The US would not go into recession in this scenario, but our GDP growth would be cut in half or potentially more than half, right? So right now, the forecast was 3.8% before this crisis started. So I'm thinking less than 2%, right? So it's growth, but it's anemic. And now we have not a double whammy, Shane. We have a triple whammy. Super high oil prices, super high inflation, and a stock market crash. And we have all of those for more than a few weeks because the stubborn guy is refusing to end the damn war, even though it's devastating his own economy. So in this scenario, right, we do see significant adjustments, short-term adjustments to price and cap rates, not to rents. Rents never decline during high inflation, right? So you're going to see rents going up, right? But cap rates would start to rise almost immediately. The lending markets would tighten up because anytime there's a real estate crash, there's a stock market crash, the lending markets, they seize up, right? So you're going to start seeing, you know, rising cap rates in this scenario. And how long does that effect last? I mean, it depends on how long the war drags on, right? Yeah. So keep in mind, the US and Saudis will start to raise oil production somewhere 4 to 6 weeks from now, but it's really impossible to raise it by 5 million barrels. So if it drags on for more than 2 months without Russian oil, assume a significant impact on real estate. And the only good news, though, if you want to call it that, is that the US Fed is going to definitely then stop hiking after the first or second hikes, because now the real economy is getting hammered, right? But I don't expect that to boost real estate much because there's still chaos in the stock market, right? So it's okay. I mean, it's definitely a positive point that those interest rate hikes have stopped for the moment, yeah. But I don't think it's a big positive, because 2 months from now, expect significant chaos in the stock markets. If this drags on for 2 months, the impact is very, very significant. And then there's scenario 2C, right? So Armageddon scenario, or close to Armageddon, not involving nuclear weapons. I don't have a scenario for that because I don't think that that's likely, mm-hmm. right? So scenario 2C, same as 2B so far, but now the more I read about this, the more I realize this, there's something known as contagion. And I don't mean like, you know, pandemic contagion. I mean financial contagion. What happened in 2008? Lehman Brothers went bankrupt. When Lehman went bankrupt, no bank in the world knew if any other bank owned a lot of Lehman, you know, product. So nobody would transact. So the world market, the financial market, basically came to a grinding halt because nobody wanted to basically, you know, transact money. This is known as contagion, right? So the Russian stock market, it's been closed since he attacked. It didn't open today. It was supposed to open today, right? If they stop selling oil, they are now insolvent. If they're insolvent, they cannot pay their debts. That's not a big deal if they're insolvent for the next two weeks. So all scenario 1B was 2 weeks. It's not a big deal, right? What if they're insolvent for more than a few weeks? Mm-hmm. Well, this is going to spread through the bond markets like contagion. It's going to create liquidity problems. It's going to create stability problems in the world bond market. This scenario is the worst in the short run, right? It's best in the long run. And I'll explain why. The bond markets are the basis of the world economy. So the moment the bond market has a contagion, the Federal Reserves of the world, including your Federal Reserve, Shane, they're going to start pumping liquidity into the market. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a standard Fed playbook, right? Whenever there's contagion in the markets, pump the market full of free money. So now, and this, by the way, is exactly what happened when Lehman, you know, went bankrupt. And then in 2020, in April, when we had coronavirus, we started, you know, pushing in massive amounts of money. The central banks, they have an established playbook. They know what to do. They're going to print aggressively. All discussions in this scenario, all discussion of rate hikes will immediately stop because now there's contagion, right? Who wants to worry about inflation when the world economy is unstable, right? Screw inflation. I'm just going to try and stabilize the world financial system,
yeah.
Right? And so the moment you do that, inflation doesn't mean anything anyway. When the world financial market is in trouble, growth will take a big hit anyway. India, Philippines, Eurozone, they will all immediately have massive slowdowns in growth. When there's no growth, what inflation? There's no inflation when demand drops, right? So now the inflation problem in this scenario just completely goes away because there's contagion in the stock markets. And so everyone immediately becomes focused on stabilizing the stock markets. Now, this scenario is very bad in a small time frame of the next, you know, 90 days, maybe 120 days. So in the short term, real estate takes a huge hit. When there's contagion in the market, there's no lending available. We saw this happen in 2008. Then we briefly saw it happen in April, May, and June of 2020. When there's contagion, nobody wants to lend money out. So now all of a sudden, you can't basically do deals. So in the short run, if you're like at the point where you're doing a deal, this is bad news for you, right? But in the long run, this is by far the best scenario for real estate. And I think by now, most people know why, right? Because the moment you pump trillions of dollars of liquidity into the world financial system, as soon as it stabilizes, it compresses cap rates because massive amounts of liquidity has been injected. We've already seen this happen twice, right? So after 2008 and then after 2020, you inject huge amounts of money, you get massive increases in real estate prices, right? So if scenario two is going to be happening, I'm praying for scenario 2C, because then the Fed's going to stop worrying about inflation and start worrying about the bond markets. And if that happens, they're going to pump in more money into the environment. And that's always good for real estate. Obviously, and when they pump liquidity in, it's easy for me to get loans too. That liquidity is mostly lending liquidity, right? So scenario 2B is bad, where there's no contagion in the bond market. Everything's just getting hammered and we're getting hammered with it. But if they start to pump money into the world economy, then I think we'll do well. So those are, and cap rate compression, we get all these benefits. Also, the interest rate hikes now get pushed back 6 months, which is another good piece of news for us. Those are the scenarios. And I gave you a bunch of them. I hope scenario one happens, where the war either ends quickly or we don't stop buying Russian oil. But if we stop buying Russian oil, I hope he either capitulates quickly, which is scenario 2A, in which case it's painful but short, or he doesn't capitulate and the stock markets get hit, growth slows down, there's only bad news there. Or the moment we start buying the Russian bonds, the Russian market now spreads contagion into the world market and then basically forces the Fed to start printing money, which in general is very good for real estate.
It's a lot to absorb.
Right? There's like so many scenarios here, right? But I can't think of any other scenario. These are the five scenarios that are going to happen. And I wouldn't be talking about this if I didn't think they're about to press this button, which is scary because the Russians never for a second thought it would happen.
Yeah, it's almost overwhelming to kind of think about the second and third order consequences of decisions that are being made now, right? And, to me, it comes down to what are the motivating factors of the various parties that can influence those decisions, right? And these are like, in my limited amount of watching what's going on with, I pronounce his name wrong, but the president of the Ukraine, I don't see
Zelensky.
Yeah. I don't see him giving up. You know what I mean? Like that.
No, he's not crazy, but he's a fighter.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
I think this only ends if they kill him. He's not going to give up.
Yeah. And then you've got Putin, who doesn't seem like the type of person that is going to admit that he was wrong or that he is going to wave the white flag in any way. Like, you really have to, I think, make sure that he's able to save face and give him what he wants, right?
Yes, think so. He has to walk away from this saying, I was victorious. I went there for three things. I got three things. Yeah. The problem is, I don't see any scenario in which the Ukrainians give him all three: Crimea, the Donetsk piece, and then he also wants Ukraine not to join the EU or join NATO. Yeah. I think those three are too many, and that's why I think at this point everyone else has realized that this guy is not going to back off, and so we have to basically escalate. But escalation has very severe consequences.
So let's just play out the scenario where Russia is no longer able to sell oil. How long could Russia continue, I guess? Like, do they have enough reserves internally to just, keep going as, because I don't fully understand what that would actually mean to their economy. Like, obviously, you've seen it. It's been devastated so far, but they keep going.
Well, the honest answer is, if the person was democratically elected, this would be over very quickly, right? Given he's a dictator with 20 years of control and command, he can choose to go as long as he wishes. I think that his country is going to become impoverished. And one thing, he's not going to run out of his oil because, he makes his own oil, right? So he has plenty of oil to fight his war, but you also need money. So I just can't imagine him going on for more than a month or two before he gets assassinated. I think that the pain there, compared to what has happened in Russia in the last 10 days, is absolutely nothing compared to what would happen if the world stops buying the oil even for 10 days. The sort of hyperinflation that we hear about in Venezuela would instantly happen in Russia, because the Russian economy buys everything else. They buy coffee, they buy food, they buy everything from outside. And if you cut everything off, you immediately, within 3 or 4 days, end up in the coronavirus situation that we had in 2020, where people were lining up for food. You know, we saw that craziness 2 years ago. If it can happen in the US, why can't it happen in Russia? They're going to run out of food. And so all kinds of stuff.
Like, are there any sanctions or any countries saying, well, we're not going to export to you, right? We're not going to import your oil. But are there any, are any countries basically saying, we're not going to export our goods to you?
Well, it's not going to matter, because you have to give the goods to them for free. Shane, the money, the $500 million a year, the $500 million that comes in every day,
yeah,
is what funds their food purchases.
Right.
So if you stop buying their oil, it is the equivalent of you saying, I can't sell, you know, food to you unless, what are you going to do? Give it away for free? Yeah. I mean, there's 50 million people's worth of food. You can't really gift it to a country that is currently in a war.
Right.
So I think it's the equivalent of that. So they end up with food shortages extremely fast. And so the question is, how much of a dictator is this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Right. It really comes down to his mental state of being if they press this button. But it's absolutely a game of who blinks first, because within a week, he's going to become aware of what, you know, if they press the button, obviously their economies are going to start getting hit. The Indian economy will go into free fall. The Philippines economy will go into free fall. So now you have one after the other, these economies collapsing. And when that happens, contagion will spread through the stock market. So he's going to say, hey, they can't afford it either. I'm just going to wait it out. You know, but once they start seeing their financial system collapse, they'll come back to the table. Who knows? I mean, the guy is a maverick.
What about countries like China or India? Because it seems to me that they have not really weighed in on this. Like, they seem to abdicate from votes. And this is like I said, my 30 minutes in the evening kind of reading up in terms of what's going on. But can they pick up the slack and say, you know what? China says, yeah, we'll buy your oil. India says, we'll buy your oil. Some of these other countries, is there enough demand from those countries to just, in terms of like who's exporting oil, it just shifts in terms of who's shipping where?
Might be difficult. I think in the short term, you have certain oil agreements with different countries. Moving oil around is not a 1 day, 2 day, or 1 week job. I do think that if both China and India agree to keep buying Russian oil, the impact could be somewhat mitigated. It's kind of hard to see how much mitigated. The reverse could also happen. So China and India have so far basically played this edge game of not beating up Russia too much,
yeah,
right? It's kind of like lip service, nothing more than that. But the moment you cut their oil off, neither country produces a lot of oil. All of the oil is coming in from the outside. Now, all of a sudden, that oil has gone from, you know, $80 a barrel on the 19th to, you know, $185 a barrel. So now their people are screaming, yeah, right, and threatening disorder. So they might actually start putting pressure on Russia, which they haven't done so far. So there's also that possibility, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, I think both countries will try to make adjustments if they still continue buying Russian oil. The problem, though, is that doesn't mean that the pain is not there for India and Russia. As the world economy starts to rock based on this, it is going to affect them. Their stock markets will still crash. Mm. I don't think that them simply buying oil is going to insulate them. There's one world economy.
How long would it take for, like, we haven't really discussed it, but let's say the shale producers start bringing more oil online, the Saudis start, you know, pumping out, Canada starts to ramp up. I've just heard today that it looks like the US is talking to Venezuela about, you know, providing you guys oil. And so I'm curious, like, at what point can the world start to produce, like, how fast can they turn on the taps to fill that shortfall?
I do have the answer to that question. So an article on oil price came up about how much of the shortfall can be mitigated. The answer is about half. So we don't have the capability of going beyond 2.5 million barrels in the world, mm-hmm, of which 1.3 million can come from the Permian basin, which is in Texas. The remaining 1.2 is a combination of the Saudis and a few others. Venezuela, I think, I don't know, a couple hundred thousand barrels a day. It's not huge.
Right.
So 2.5 million barrels, but that 2.5 million barrels will take at least 6 to 8 weeks. A lot will go wrong between now and then.
Right.
Right. So again, it could be very painful. It could be very short. I'm hoping that if we do go the painful route, it's short and painful. And, you know, it's painful and short. So that way we get out of it and then we can continue on with a pretty decent year that we were going to be projecting anyway. It's the painful and long with a madman in the middle that is the real problem. potential real problem.
Well, I mean, I'm curious because I know you have various projects under development, right? At different stages. How do you look at that right now? Because I'm a developer, right? I've got certain things on the go. And hearing this, I'm definitely worried. As a real estate investor or a developer, there's only so many variables we can control, right? And so when we start talking about interest rates and inflation and things that are completely outside of our control, I start to look at and say, okay, what can I do now to prepare? What can I do to mitigate? How can I either stockpile or... So I'm curious, like, what's your plan as it relates to some of the projects that you have at various stages right now?
Well, if I am about to get a loan, I'm going to hurry up and get it as quickly as I can.
Yeah.
If the loan's more than 2 or 3 months out, I'm going to start preparing for that project to get delayed, right? So get pushed out, you know, 3 to 6 months. I want to see the end of this. I want to get to the point where there's a ceasefire. Because if there's a ceasefire fairly quickly, I don't see it becoming a big deal, right? If there's contagion, then I want to wait for a while, because that will mean incredible amounts of liquidity will come into the world economy, and that will make my loans cheaper. So I'm just going to sit and wait and say, I don't mind it lowering my IRRs because I'm going to get a gift in the future, right? So I think the biggest risk is you have a project that you get a loan on, and you had a first, and you were planning to get a second loan on it. Now that second loan is simply unavailable, so your construction gets stuck in the middle, because you needed both the first and the second to complete. In this sort of environment, never get a first and a second. Always just get a first that takes you all the way through. Yeah. Once they sign, they can't really get out of it, right? Yeah. So, and if they don't sign, it means a delay. 3 months, 6 months, it's going to hit our IRRs. The way I look at it, I'm going to go back to my investors and say, look, black swan event, we don't have anything to do with it. It's hurting us. You know us, we've... You know, for projects that we were supposed to make 20%, you've made 50. For projects you were, you know, supposed to make 25, you made 60. We'll figure out how to make this up on the back end. It makes sense to just wait 3 to 6 months until something settles, right? And hopefully it doesn't lead the US into recession, because if it does, then my projects could be affected by a year or 2 years. Luckily, we don't have any projects where we have like debt that will keep accruing.
Right. I'm just looking because I took notes between these various scenarios. And what would be the difference between 2B, where Putin refuses, and Armageddon? Like, is there a reason that the bond market would not go into contagion if Putin refuses? And that, like, do you know where I'm going with that? Like, I'm just trying to understand.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 2B and 2C are two different scenarios. 2B basically said is a really bad scenario, but there's no bond market contagion. Right? So bad things happen, stock markets crash, you know, all kinds of bad stuff's happening, inflation's happening, you know, Fed's raising, forced to raise interest rates because of inflation. All those bad things are happening in 2B, but there's no contagion in the bond market, which leads to a different kind of problem altogether, the same kind of problem we had in 2008. Mm-hmm. The answer to that question is Russia, because sanctions have been in effect for 6 years, but as far as the size of its economy is concerned, it's the 11th largest economy in the world. If it normally, if the 11th largest economy in the world becomes insolvent, you immediately have contagion in the world economy, immediately, right? Even Greece, which was like the 30th large economy in the world, threatened to create contagion. And it's way smaller than Russia is, right? So your contagion is going to happen. But I keep reading that because they had sanctions on them, they're not as plugged into the world economy as other countries are. Right. So if that's true, it may not cause contagion. Because again, when Argentina, which is a tiny economy, defaults on its debt, immediately everybody worries about contagion because it can spread very rapidly and cascade across the world within 48 hours. This is a much larger economy. We have never taken this kind of a devastating measure in the history of the modern world on such a big economy. We've never done that. We've never come close. Right. So the only scenario that's like this is what happened to Lehman Brothers in 2008. So the question is, how much Russian, you know, debt is interweaved into the world economy will determine whether there's contagion or not.
Have you researched that, or is that a difficult task to...
I'm not even sure the banks know. The world economy is weird. I mean, there's so much lack of transparency in the world, the way it works. I wish we could all get on blockchain and have some more transparency. But it's not clear how big an impact it is. The only way to tell is to go through it. So we will find out, because as far as I'm concerned, even before we stop buying their oil, I think they're already insolvent. I think they're insolvent now. And within the next 2 or 3 weeks, there's going to be news from some bank saying, I'm sorry, we can't pay anybody because, you know, 50% of our money was Russian. That's been frozen. And we can't pay our debt back. So, you know, the first bank that falls is not a big deal. The second is not a big deal. By the time the third one falls, everybody's like, oh my God, a bank's falling every day. Stop doing business.
Yeah.
Don't transact, right? And that creates contagion.
Well, this has been a very enlightening conversation, Neil.
I wish it was fun, but it's, you know, it is what it is, right? We are at this precipice at this point. And I just, like everybody else, I'm just hoping we back off. He backs off. Or the Ukrainians basically, you know, I don't want them to agree, but maybe they just agree to his three demands and say, fine, you know, whatever. Take what you want. We'll sign. Go away. Mm-hmm. Right? Which I think the problem with that chain is he's going to come back and do it to another country in a year or two.
Yeah.
Right? If you just simply agree to everything, then, but who can blame the Ukrainians, right? They're the ones spilling their blood.
Yeah.
We're just sitting here and watching this on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right. It's we're just, you know, spectators and trying to see how this impacts our lives where, yeah, there's just tragedies going on a minute by minute basis. And it's, it's devastating. Okay, Neil, I want to be respectful of your time. Where can people go to obviously learn more about you, some of your thoughts, because this isn't obviously you're a very deep thinker, right? You're really plugged into what's going on in the world, supply, demand, money. You know, I was going to even ask you about whether or not you think this is kind of good for crypto. I'm not a crypto guy, but I know that it tends to be in conversations more and more these days, but maybe we'll have another round three at some point. But where can people find out more about you?
The easiest way is simply by Googling my name. I'm the only Neil Bawa on the World Wide Web. So just type in N-E-A-L space Bawa. If you want to learn more about my crypto thoughts, just add the word crypto. If you want to learn more about my thoughts on, you know, on this oil shock, just wait for a few days and add it in. I'm sure there'll be others asking me for information. In general, I'm very bullish on real estate because of all the money printing that we've done, an absolutely disgusting amount of money printing, what we did in 2020 will take 10 years to unwind. And during that time, liquidity in the market will be far higher than it normally is. So that'll create an abnormal market for the next decade, right? So I'm extremely bullish. Obviously, there could be very significant impact from this event if he doesn't back off or the Ukrainians don't back off. There are severe consequences and we'll just have to put up with them. Hopefully they're short, right? Yeah. So I will be providing more thoughts on my YouTube channel. Another place to go see what I think about this is multifamily followed by the letter U.com. That's our website. We call it Multifamily University. So multifamilyu.com. And check it out. I think we'll have more thoughts there shortly. Actually, I'm watching this very carefully. Most people are like, what does this have to do with me in Calgary real estate? Well, it has to do with everything everywhere in the world, right? The world economy functions on oil.
Thank you very much, Neil. This has been, I think people are going to get a lot of great insights out of this. And I'm a little more somber than usual just because, you know, I'm just literally processing it. And I probably have 4 pages of notes that I'm going to re-listen and digest. So I really appreciate you, you know, sharing, you know, the amount of, you know, you took 12 hours out of your Sunday to go through this and obviously share it with my audience. And I appreciate it. And I'll thank you on behalf of them as well. So thank you.
Well, hopefully you can get it out quicker. So maybe we can make a change to your podcast schedule, right? And please send it to us because we have listeners that would like to hear about this as well. 100%. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Neil.
Thanks for listening. And if you are interested in going deeper into the world of commercial real estate and you'd like my help and a small group of people that are also going along that journey to start investing in commercial real estate, what I would encourage you to do is to send me an email with the word coaching in it, and I will send you details if that's something of interest. And you can send that email to shane@shanemelanson.com. There will be my email in the show notes. It is my personal email, so please only email if you've got a question or if you are sincerely interested in the upcoming coaching that I've got starting at the beginning of next month. So that's all for now, and we will see you next week. Bye for now.